Welcome to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And today we are joined by Jason from the Avenging Hour, or Avenging Hour, depending on the social media platform.
yeah, we screwed that up. We lost a password at some point.
I know. It's years ago. That was like mid-volume one for you all.
Yeah. So that's when we were thinking about, why are we doing this? Maybe we should just give it up.
Is this the Avenging Half Hour?
Wow.
Don't mess with my time.
So with our rule of three, we ask our guests to pick someone, and this time we have someone pretty obscure, like our previous selections. Well, Chad's that we haven't recorded yet, but will air before this episode. A little obscure, but Chad from Gray Malkin Lane can afford to be obscure. That's his comfort zone. But you, Jason, really pick someone I had no clue about, like no clue.
Me neither. And I was like, wait, is this just Iron Man? And then they realized that Iron Man was also like from way back when.
I've been reading comics for a very long time.
You picked Machine Man, and I referenced this in one of our Alpha Flight episodes a couple months back, that there was an Alpha Flight appearance, which is footnoted in one of these issues we read for today's episode, where they showed up for like 2 seconds, like a little nibble of toast in Machine Man 18. And I debated, like, do we cover that on our Alpha Flight coverage or not? And I was like, no, just not worth it.
I've not heard the phrase nibble of toast before.
I made it up. Jason, can you describe to us who Machine Man is?
Before we get started, I want to point out that my partner on Avenging Hour, John, picked Mr. Fantastic, who has to be the most generic, boring selection that he could have picked. I just wanted to get an insult in on John before we got started. I grew up, you know, mostly in the 70s, early 80s, in my prime, and like all those weird, obscure, colorful characters were the ones that I glommed onto for some reason. I'm a weirdo at heart, I guess. Machine Man is basically the Marvel Universe's Inspector Gadget. He has like telescopic arms and legs. He's kind of snarky. He was part of this project to create sentient robots who thought they were alive, but most of them went crazy because they couldn't figure out why they weren't human. And he's kind of like this weird... He was created sort of like not part of the Marvel Universe and then just kind of became part of it. So he's in this weird little corner by himself where he has like weird adventures with people that you wouldn't really think. Like he has a little run here with the Hulk for some reason. Like he's just this obscure character who always seemed interesting to me in the background.
Yeah. And I read it. We probably won't cover this footnote in the first issue we review, but there was a footnote referencing Marvel's coverage of 2001 A Space Odyssey, like issue 8 is where he had an adventure.
That's so, where he first appeared, yeah.
So okay. It is very much like Marvel in the 70s and 80s had a ton of licensed properties that they would interpret and then like just run with. So it eventually...
Yeah, they like, did War of the Worlds turned into a Killraven series, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a bunch of obscure movies that you wouldn't expect. And they did a bunch of stuff with Kiss, the rock band, for a while, and Shogun Warriors out of Japan.
Even when it comes to different licenses like Micronauts and ROM, Space Knight.
Oh, yeah.
So
all that stuff based on toys.
Yes, those were, and G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Definitely just toys. Had a lot of different corners, like you were saying, where they could explore and do wonky things. And I would say that Machine Man, very wonky in his original run. Like, we're going to read issue 19, which is his last issue in his solo series, that they're very clear is the last issue right on the cover. They're like, surprise!
Yeah.
It's a collector's item because it's the last one.
Bet you didn't think it would even make it this long, did you?
I loved how whimsical it was. Like, the camp factor of alliterations is off the charts.
Oh, that's definitely who's writing
that's
this?
Tom DeFalco.
It's Tom DeFalco poking fun at Stan Lee.
I think, or maybe I always feel Tom DeFalco was a little silver agey himself. And I think he's the guy that did most of the Star Comics series, right? The kids stuff.
Oh yeah. Yep.
I just chalked it up to a high camp factor and was along for the ride and liked it.
It is very 1960s TV's Batman.
Yes. Yes.
Right now with Machine Man, where we're catch us up to speed. So there have been 18 issues. What has happened in his adventures?
Well, back in the day, John and I used to do, we would trade write-ups of the issues we were covering, and I kind of gave up on it because I didn't want to do it anymore. So I did a write-up where I get to be snarky. So I'm going to read this whole thing that'll lead us up to issue 19, and feel free to jump in and ask questions if you want.
Okay.
So Machine Man first appeared in July of 1977 in 2001, A Space Odyssey number 8, which we discussed. Now, the weird thing about this is the film 2001 had come out in 1968. So like Marvel would usually license some of these film things. They would come out like at the same time. Like I remember the Star Wars or the Empire Strikes Back came out like the same year as the movie. And this one was so strange, and it had to do with Jack Kirby agreeing to come back to Marvel. Jack Kirby created the character, obviously, one of the comic gods. We don't need to talk about his whole career here, but I want to stick a pin in the timeline right now because he had been at DC for 5 years, and he came back, and part of his agreement was that Marvel would give him more control, both creatively and editorially, over his work. And one of the things that he really wanted to do for some reason was adapt the Stanley Kubrick film. I don't know why Marvel let him do this.
What a choice. Like, I was thinking when you originally, like, I knew it came out in 68, but then you said it came out in 77. And I was like, wow. Like, was Marvel trying to capitalize on Kubrick coming out with The Shining that year? Or was The Shining 78?
I think this was just completely Jack Kirby. And it's strange because, I mean, 2001 is a really like a thoughtful film, I guess. There's like long lingering shots and, you know, slow developing scenes, which is something Kirby is not known for. He's definitely not a subtle comic creator.
Right.
So after he did the movie adaptation, Marvel then produced this. It started out as a 10-issue monthly series to keep the narrative going. And Kirby kind of controlled himself for the first 7 issues. But he was being really repetitive. I didn't know if you know a lot about the movie. There's that big black monolith thing that people like bow down to. And so he's taking all these characters from the past and from the future, and he's exposing them to this monolith, and they're going through like these weird, like Steve Ditko landscapes, and all this stuff's happening. And then all of a sudden, I don't know if he got bored or he just couldn't help himself anymore, but he really swung for the superhero fences with issue 8 and brought in Machine Man, who was not called Machine Man to start with. He's gone through like 6 names in these first few issues. So the story starts, as I had sort of mentioned, in this underground research complex where this series of robots have gone crazy because they can't come to terms with the fact that they're robots, but they're also humans, but they're still robots. So conveniently, 50 of these robots are destroyed when these fail-safe bombs that they put in them are detonated. Like they're trying to shut down the whole project. However, Machine Man, who at this time is called X-51, lives at the home of Dr. Abel Stack. And Dr. Stack is trying to socialize this robot by treating him as his son. So he's given him a name. He's called him Aaron. And he's given him a human face to wear over top of his robot face.
Oh, nice.
It's really weird. And I guess Dr. Stack knows that the overall experiment's failing. So he's in this... His house looks like he lives on the beach in like the mansion that Magnum lived in and something. He removes the bomb from X-51 and sends him off into the world to do something somewhere. But then instead of throwing the bomb like one direction and running the other like a normal person would do, Dr. Stack just stands there and holds the bomb until it explodes. So, oh no, my dad is dead.
Scene. And it is a Marvel character, so you sort of need like a tragic parent story. Yes. So he's set up now.
Yes, his parent is dead. All of his siblings are dead. He's off in the world to find his way. The rest of this first issue follows him as he's pursued by the army led by this Colonel Craig, who I guess is his first villain. It's kind of like the Incredible Hulk TV show, where they're constantly followed by that one army dude. He's eventually captured, but then that monolith thing shows up and it frees him. And it's a really weird cliffhanger, but I guess I guess Kirby's still trying to hold on to the fact that he's on 2001 A Space Odyssey, but this really has nothing to do with the movie at this point. Issue 9, confusingly, finds X-51 a captive back at the research facility. He's angry that Krag has taken his face off of him and his like human uniform. And most of the issue is just him rampaging through this place until the head of the facility, Dr. Broadhurst, gives the order to let him leave. He gets his face and his clothes back. He takes off into the woods, sees the monolith again, but tells it to like buzz off and leave him alone, which is pretty much the end of the 2001 references in here. He hitches a ride with this guy, gets pursued by some sort of Green Hornet knockoff named Mr. Hotline. Amazing name. And he makes short work of Mr. Hotline's goons, and he heads into this town. In the final, quote unquote, final issue of the series, number 10, we learn that Hotline is a member of the Brotherhood of Hades, whose leader seeks the secret to gaining control over all living things. Mr. Hotline's goons capture him this time, and he's, for some reason, X-51 is now inexplicably called Mr. Machine. They never really tell us why. They disassemble him, like literally take him apart. And when his head is threatened, they want to get inside it. His limbs leap into action and take out the bad guys individually.
Nice.
Mr. Machine then attacks this thing called the Mind Monitor, who is supposed to be this demon-like creature that Mr. Hotline answers to. But he finds out it's actually a supercomputer, and it starts to destroy the entire bunker complex and monologues about this evil genius at the center of a devil-worshipping cult, none of which has been effectively shown at this point. It's all computers and weirdos. And then the final blurb on the last page lets us know that Mr. Machine will next appear in his own series.
Ooh. What a
so tease. That's like, the end of 2001 A Space Odyssey.
And I mean, this shows how bold Marvel was, not only in doing 2001 A Space Odyssey 9 years after the fucking movie came out, but that they launched this character and they're like, you know what? Two appearances, solo series before those are even printed and out in the world. Like, absolutely, we're going all in.
I can only imagine at this point, Jack Kirby has a copy of his contract like hanging around his neck. So anywhere he goes, he just shows it to them like, yeah, you got to do what I want to do.
And I mean, there had to have been a lot of cocaine in the Marvel offices in the late 70s. Like, holy shit, there are some nosebleeds happening. So please continue.
Okay.
The solo series.
Yes, solo series. 7 months later, Machine Man number one, cover dated April of 1978. this issue pretty much ignores that last thing with Mr. Hotline and the Brotherhood of Hades. They're like, well, that was weird. Let's not go there. And they pick back up again with the first two issues, and he's being chased again by Colonel Krag, but he is now called Machine Man. It's on the cover and everything. As the story progresses, Machine Man demonstrates the ability to fly. He can extend his limbs. He shoots fire and other blasts from his hands. And he turns his forearms into tank treads when his legs get weird.
Oh.
And they introduce the only weakness that I remember seeing throughout here is he... there's these sonic weapons that this army is using against him, and he's like really susceptible to being hit with a sonic beam. He's kind of like Venom, I guess. I'm not going to go through every issue, but I will recap the weird things that happened issues 2 through 9.
Yes.
We learn that Machine Man's face is his humanity. He has dreams and nightmares. He can turn rocks into diamonds by crushing them really hard.
Wow.
The army tracks him using a homing device in his head. He can transmit audio and video from other sources. He makes friends with his psychiatrist. Yes, he goes to see a psychiatrist to try and deal with his lack of humanity. And he makes friends with this guy, Dr. Spaulding, who you'll notice he starts to build like a supporting cast here. He has suction cups in his hands and feet. He has magnets and springs in his feet. He is smart enough to create a trans-dimensional space-time bridge.
No.
And then he is able to then teleport himself by dimensional transfer. It is so stupid. And he spends all of his time in this place called Central City, which, deep cut for Marvel, that was the original home of the Fantastic Four. This is not the DC one where Flash or the Spirit lived in. This is the Marvel Central City. Issue number 9 also includes my favorite line of this entire series. He's playing a game of baseball with some of the army guys, and he says, "I believe I've started a rhubarb." I have no idea what it means, even in context. Like, there's some sort of double play thing going on, and he's like, "Oh, I believe I've started rhubarb."
What?
It's very like Andy Griffith's show. Like, he's Opie. I don't know how it fits in.
I love rhubarb, but I don't know what that means.
No, that's fun.
After issue 9, his series is quote unquote canceled, and he shows up over in the Incredible Hulk title for a while, as I mentioned. While he's there, the corporation tricks Hulk into thinking Machine Man has kidnapped his friend Trish Starr, who is Egghead's niece. Another deep cut there. Oh. Machine Man's case before Congress, yes, he's being seen before Congress as, like, should they get rid of him or not, is put on indefinite hold. There's a big fight, a big misunderstanding, and a month later, in August of 79, the Machine Man series picks back up. So this has been, like, 6 months, I think. I think he disappeared for a while and was in Hulk for, like, 3 or 4 issues, and then his series picks up. But now Jack Kirby's gone. And for issues 10 through 14, I believe, Marv Wolfman is writing with Steve Ditko doing the art. So you go from Kirby to Ditko, which is a huge leap. After 14, Tom DeFalco replaces Wolfman, as we had talked about, and he finishes out the series then. During this run, Machine Man goes, obviously, much more superhero-y. He's almost like a poor man's Spider-Man. He gets redesigned where he has less weapons and gadgetry. He gets a job as an insurance investigator.
Yes.
He's like wearing sunglasses in the office the whole time, so no one can see his crazy eyes. The Fantastic Four appear in issue 15. And I will say on a side note that Steve Ditko draws a really weird looking thing. And then we meet a character named Gears Garvin, who is a self-taught mechanic who also joins the supporting cast. And you can tell how much Marvel loves this guy, because on the next issue, they spell his name wrong on the cover. Oh, we get to thrill to the pulse-pounding action of insurance investigation. We learn that there's such a thing as diamond hard steel, which seems like a misnomer. Mm. And we get another dazzling bon mot when a security guard is trying to stop Baron Brimstone, and he says, "Gentle down, sucker." I don't know what that means either.
I feel like there's something in this issue too that I was just like, that seems like a malaprop, or maybe it's just too old fashioned for me. I don't know.
This is where, like, you can really tell once Tom DeFalco picks up, things get really, like I said before, Silver Agey. Like, Machine Man's kind of goofy. He has way too many quips, kind of like Spider-Man. But he's resourceful. He's much more the Inspector Gadget character here. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned Baron Brimstone. I have to have an aside. I got to mention the Avenging Hour. Baron Brimstone later appears in January 1985 in Avengers number 251, where he is taken out by the Wasp and Paladin. So good for you, Baron Brimstone.
Paladin was brought in to be Wasp's fuck buddy.
Yeah.
Is he in Generation X?
Yes.
That dude?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, I mean, good for her. Like, I actually really like that relationship for her. Like, she actually had some agency, and it didn't end terribly.
No.
Unlike most of her other relationships. Like, it was adult, and she was like, you know what? We're just fucking around and having a good time.
And we're going to put a pin on that until we get to the end of the third issue.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So finishing out the last 3 issues here, we learn that Machine Man enjoys both Billy Joel and The Tonight Show. He relies on his roller skates that he has in his feet a lot.
No. Oh, yeah. He's like Amy Carter.
He's constantly being jolted by these sonic beams just enough to knock out the anti-gravity units in his legs so he can't fly around. And the writers keep trying to introduce this romance with one of his office mates, and it just seems so creepy. Before we get into issue 19, I guess you guys will cover that for me. I want to take a second just to point out the massive villains that he's faced off leading up to this. They include 10-4, the Mean Machine, the Corporation, a man named Senator Brickman, a character named Binary Bug, Kubla Khan, Ion, Baron Brimstone, Madam Menace, who is also known as Sunset Bane, We see her later with Iron Man and Iron Man 2020, I believe. And then finally in this issue, we're going to do Jack-O-Lantern, the famous Spider-Man villain.
So I read this issue last night to prepare for this episode.
Yeah, because you want it to be fresh in your mind.
I mean, I did it this morning because I got up here late.
So when I saw it was Jack-O-Lantern, in a weird case of serendipity, in the mail to me, maybe arriving today, is the Marvel Legends action figure of Jack-O-Lantern.
You were so excited by reading this that you ordered the figure?
No, I ordered the figure based off of how fucking wonky he looks. I'm a sucker for, I don't collect a whole lot of spider people. Like, it's usually X-Men action figures and Avengers. Yeah. But if it's a weird looking Spider-Man villain, I'm all in. I'm like, take my fucking money, Hasbro.
So you must have loved the early run of Spectacular Spider-Man with the big wheel and Razorback. And
I have not read a whole lot of that.
Oh, they're amazing.
But Jack-O-Lantern, I also ordered Hallows Eve because she's recent. She came out, her first issue was like 2 years ago. She is the love interest of Ben Reilly. Clone, not clone. Don't worry about it.
it's way complicated.
but I saw Jack-O-Lantern and I'm like, a Halloween theme villain that is just called Jack-O-Lantern. That has like little bombs and shit and has like a flying disc. Sign me up. I want that action figure. I need it.
Is it a flying disc or is it a pogo platform?
Oh.
You won't really see it in action because you ever see it floating and you just assume it just zips around, but I bet it bounces. I bet it's really ridiculous.
They had these things when we were growing up because we are children, like we were born in the mid 80s. So it was basically like one of the fucking gym balls with a disc around it.
Yeah, and you squeezed it between your feet.
Yes. And you were like, I'm going to break. Like, how many skulls were cracked on curbs because of those?
I tried so hard to make that a thing.
So Jack-O-Lantern basically invented that.
Yeah.
Or was Thank it you.
Your product?
If I were to have like some sort of child technology from back then to like just wail on superheroes, mine would be the skip it.
Oh.
I would skip it my ass right towards them and like as I get slowly closer and closer, like it'd have spikes on it or something to like butch it up. But
I mean, like, basically, you could do that with like a Razor scooter these days, too.
I would, and I would sing the theme song, like skip it, and they would know I'm coming. Like it would not be a surprise, but at least I would get my cardio in. And it, there's a counter on that ball, according to the jingle. So.
So it's like getting your steps in for the day.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Before we had like the health app on a phone, we had Skip It.
I mean, I hope people still have a Skip It so that they can be like, I'm 150 steps short of my goal for the day. I'm going to skip it for like 5 minutes.
They're out in the garage. Just I need to skip it.
I met my goal.
Okay, so what? We are starting with Machine Man 19 on the cover.
Can I read the blue box?
On the cover before the blue box, it says the Complete Your Collection Special. Or guess what, Meg won't have a 20th issue. You could tell that Tom DeFalco was pretty early in his Marvel career. He's one of the writers that they would draw out to like fill in. I would say that's probably a thing in the late 70s as well. They would just plug people into series and be like, all right, you got 4 issues on this, go. We need anyone to write it. So they gave Tom DeFalco the unenviable task to be like, okay, we're bringing you on this book. Congratulations. We're canceling it. through no fault of your own, but you know, we still need to deliver like 5 issues. So
I think Tom DeFalco is like the Grim Reaper of bad Marvel runs.
Okay.
There's a Batman and a Superman on the cover. It's like, so there's a party And Machine Man's telescopic arm has upset the punch table, which is rude. But there's spoofs on the characters, like
because it's
Thor with a beer belly, a very scrawny Hulk. There's a Daredevil, Sue Storm. I don't know who this woman in silver is in the front, but they're all like spoof versions of themselves,
which makes sense for the issue.
Oh. Yeah, but
it's the Halloween party.
But if you don't know what's going on in the issue, right. You're like, what is this, a parody comic?
Yes.
So this is it, True Believer, the cataclysmic climax to our Mechanical Misfits' charismatic career. Beware of all-out action, prodigious pathos, and the mightiest of Marvel merriment as Machine Man is jolted by Jack-O-Lantern.
And we're all speechless.
Well, and then it goes, introducing Jack-O-Lantern, the most merciless mercenary of all. This titanic tale of triumph and tragedy begins on the very next eye-popping page. Turn here if you dare. Because we just get like a splash page of Jack-O-Lantern battling with Machine Man.
Yeah.
It's like a little taste.
And this is literally that, Jack-O-Lantern's first appearance.
Yeah, I need to get it now, apparently, since I'm like a Jack-O-Lantern fan.
I like his outfit on the cover more than the inside.
No.
Like the green scales are fine, but the purple with the very clashing orange belt.
Very Halloween.
Yes, and his head is more like a flaming sphere rather than like a pumpkin.
I fucking love that pumpkin. He has like his eyes are not matching.
As any small child carving a jack-o'-lantern would do.
Speaking of eyes that are not matching, wow, Machine Man's human face is melted.
It's serving Captain Pike.
No. Captain Pike from Star Trek the original series after his accident.
Yes.
Oof. So they're trying to, they're looking at this face, which is like steel, but also putty and
melty.
And they're like, we need to fix this. And it's Gears, who's like, I can do this, but it'll take a few hours.
And to go back to what Jason was saying about like the callback in the language, it's like, there's the name Gears Garvin, which at first I thought was like an expletive, like Gears. Rather than like an actual name, because up below it there's Clampett Spaulding. Like I just enjoy the mechanical language that they're using.
So he needs his face fixed, and we've all been there before.
Yeah, but he's freaking out because this is like his thing.
And he's like, okay, well, I'm just going to go out. I'm going to go incognito. And he's going to be alone with his thoughts. He's having a sad boy moment.
I mean, points to Spaulding for being like, I worry about him. Maybe he shouldn't be alone. But he wants to be alone.
Like, well, that's his psychiatrist, you know, he's worried about him.
Yeah, it's like very sidekick type concern.
And this is where we get a little bit of the backstory on the 50 robots. And all that, because he's walking through the city.
Okay, but if you had like purple spandex with a silver band and a robot face, would a trench coat and a hat really do it?
It works. It works for Ben Grimm all the time.
Yes.
Fair.
I do like the fact that they're doing an origin flashback in the last issue of the series. It seems really weird.
It really does. Then we go to some thugs gathering together, and they're wondering where their boss is. Like, where's the big heavy? And then Jack-O-Lantern throws a firecracker. It's not a bomb. He throws like a firecracker in the middle of them, and he's like, here I am, bitches. Hi.
Your training isn't going hard enough because you didn't notice me hovering near the ceiling.
He wasn't hovering, he was bouncing.
Yes. He has to consistently make contact with the floor to go back up.
It's like his pogo platform.
And there, one of them is like, Jack-O-Lantern, go easy, man. Your wrist blaster could have fried us. And then there's like a thought bubble where they're like, he's so cold, so inhuman. The very sight of him chills my blood. What? What is chilling your blood?
If you saw him in his like lime green scaly and his dark green tights and his little pumpkin head, I feel like you'd want to be like, hey, let's be friends.
And the boots that he got from the same person that Hawkeye gets his boots from, except Hawkeye's are purple.
The rollover pirate boot there.
Yes.
Have you noticed in this issue that Jack-O-Lantern is like constantly screaming?
Yeah.
I wonder if, like, can they not hear him through the pumpkin or the is the bouncing pogo thing making too much noise?
Like, there's the bubbles for the internal monologues. There's the smooth text bubbles for like normal speech, but Jack-O-Lanterns are all jagged.
Yeah, he's yelling. He's like, can you guys hear me? This drive-through speaker is horrible.
I mean, one of them does call him Big Mouth, which, rude. He can't help it that his mouth is so big and jaggedy.
It was carved that way.
What if that's actually his head?
Ooh, I hope it is. So that after like two panels, Jack-O-Lantern is fed the fuck up and throws a smoke grenade at them.
He's like, oh, you think you're so tough? Let's go. I'll take you all out at once. And he does by gassing them. And he's like, don't expect a fair fight. If you want to win, like, don't do it. Like,
he's giving them some real tough love.
Yeah. But we learn that he has his own air supply in that pumpkin. And
he's getting high on his own supply.
Yeah.
It's all the cinnamon and nutmeg and ginger spice. Like,
it's a pumpkin spice helmet.
On the inside, you know it is.
Yes.
And his armor is very tough. Like, he could withstand a bazooka.
Sure.
That doesn't make any sense.
It looks very flexible for that durability.
Then we go back. Machine Man is getting his face and Gears is like, take it easy, like, don't do anything crazy, it still needs to set.
Yeah.
And Machine Man is immediately like, it's okay, I'm going to my job at the insurance agency.
With my,
I'll totally ignore him with this face that you just molded for me, no one will notice.
And
I had to read that twice. I'm like, wait, did he just say insurance agency? Like, he's a superhero, but his incognito job is
insurance.
Yep. He's at a desk.
And his psychiatrist is like, do you think you should go back to work so soon? And he's like, I'll have to do it sometime.
But listen to your psychologist and take a mental health day.
Yeah. But no, he goes to the Delmar insurance agency.
Yes. Someone's got, like, subscribe to the power clashing Vogue issues. Like, he's got a red bow tie and an orange suit.
Oof.
And a gambling problem.
Yes.
Yeah, that guy's like the Jimmy Olsen of the group.
Yes, that's what my thought was. Like, he looks like a Jimmy Olsen.
And so he's like, hey, you're back, sorry you haven't been here,
can you spot me until Friday?
Yeah. And then on the next page, it's one small loan later.
And there's the Bishy coworker. It's like, your face looks swollen. Oh, no, that's not the Bishy one. That's the love interest who's like, do you have a toothache? Your face looks swollen. And the Bishy one is like, you're always late. You're also late. You've kept us waiting.
Mm.
And she just does not let up on him.
No.
But she does introduce her brother Brock Jones
as a possible love interest. Like,
I don't know why he's there. Why
I don't know. I don't
on the
know.
Last issue of the series, here's a new guy.
Aaron, this is my brother Brock Jones.
As they're like whispering as their boss goes through this presentation about a super embassy that can withstand assaults and like no one will be taken hostage.
Like, wow, really leaning heavy into the hostage crisis, Marvel. Fuck.
Yes.
I bet that Brock Jones has been brought up in like the past 5 years by name somewhere just so Marvel can keep the copyright on him.
Is Brock Jones the name of the original torpedo from Daredevil?
I have no clue.
I feel like that guy's name is Brock something.
Now he's working in insurance. So there's going to be this big party at this super embassy.
Yeah, to show how impregnable that it is.
And to show it off, they're inviting diplomats basically from the United Nations. They're like, everyone at the UN, like, let's do our business after party, super embassy.
The boss knows Aaron is Machine Man, so he's like, you're in charge of security. And as people are filing out, they're like, oh, they're just, he's just buttering up the boss. But also, I love the thought bubbles where Machine Man is like, Pam, Pam, you affect my circuitry in weird and wonderful ways.
Oh, creepy. You
in that flesh, not metal. And Pam is like, Aaron, can't you see I love you? It's so over the top. I love it.
Yes.
Like, you got to think ahead, though. Like, what would happen? Like, what's going to happen if they try to hook up somehow?
Is he like Data and he's fully functional?
I mean,
is he like a Ken doll and he's just smooth down there?
Ooh, I bet he's smooth.
I bet he is.
But I can see them because Marvel is really tapping into creators like from the 70s and 80s to come back and write things. I mean, J.M. DeMatteis is doing something with that Daredevil armor.
Oh, Daredevil Black Armor?
Yes. Like, they brought him back in the past couple months to do a limited series. What if they bring DeFalco back, which they have brought DeFalco back for other things. What if they bring DeFalco back to do a continuation of this series?
But it has to pick up.
Yes.
Yes. Right where it leaves off. And I just looked it up, and Brock Jones is the original name of the Daredevil villain Torpedo. So they've carried the name, and he has Wikipedia said like no reference to Machine Man, but Brock Jones is a Marvel character.
You should add that to the Wikipedia.
I should throw it in there. First scene in.
The first appearance.
We know his family and everything.
So we see the security protocols at the super embassy, but then as Machine Man leaves, there's someone photographing things. And he doesn't stop this person or even question him. He's like, oh, this new technology that someone's photographing?
But the dude's a notorious gangster. So he hops into a tree.
As yeah. you do.
And like, this is like an arborvitae tree. Like, there's no room in there.
There isn't.
But he finds a way.
Yeah.
And he changes and stores his purple suit and blue tie into his legs. I guess that's, if everything is at his feet, then his legs have the carrying capacity.
Do they? They're filled with like roller skates and suction cups and magnets and,
and everything, and all the telescoping poles.
Maybe he just leaves it in the bush. He probably does. He's going back there. He has to be back there for an event.
I'm not exactly sure what his job is as an insurance investigator. Like, I know they explained it early on. He has to go out and check things to make sure they
work. He's an adjuster then.
Yeah. So he's here to make sure this impenetrable embassy is like worth the cost for them to insure it, I guess. So we're going to have a costume party here we're getting to. And I want to let everyone know that the makes no sense that they're having this embassy that no one can break into, and then they just let in a bunch of strangers in costumes. Yes. They don't know who they are.
And it's not anywhere, like, it's not in a different country.
No, it's like a prototype embassy.
Yeah.
Just so in, like Kansas.
Yeah.
Right. No one's going to be assaulting it in Kansas, or so we think.
So he follows this guy with his magnet hand. So
he has to save battery. So he attaches his hand to the car.
And extends up like he's a big antenna. And he's like, I hope we don't go through any overpasses.
Lucky for him, they don't. Like, the drive downtown is without incident, thus preserving our mechanical Marvel's dubious dignity.
So good. Dubious and, for sure.
On the way, the thug stops by a 1-hour photo booth to get these photos developed. It's a drive-up one in the parking lot of like a grocery store.
But no one notices Machine Man stuck to the top of his car.
Out in the big open sky, like a kite.
And Jack-O-Lantern is now reviewing the shots. He's like, these are great. Wow. And Machine Man is looking through a skylight and just falls through.
He's 800 and 850 pounds. Those are some very dense magnets in his feet.
Yeah.
So much for his dubious dignity.
Yes. And all the thugs, like, one attacks with a very round dumbbell. Like, you would not want to work out with that. It's just going to roll all over the place. That's why the shapes now are hexagons.
And the other one has, like, those bats that you can work out with.
Is it a bully club, or is it, like, a cudgel, or is it a bowling pin?
No, those are...
There's a bowling alley attached to the gym.
Those are for working out, too.
What?
Yeah. Watch a movie from the 40s. They work out with those.
You just, like, beat each other with them.
And so you can, like, swing them around like they're weighted.
Oh.
So they all have workout equipment because another person went to the bench press.
Oh, yeah.
So they're attacking him with exercise equipment.
It is the gym that they were at before.
And he springs away. He gets a gym mat to trap all of them.
Yes. And he just wraps them up in a little package.
And Jack-O-Lantern is like, oh, my.
He's good, but he's not good enough for me.
And he pogos over.
He pogos off the walls, off the floor.
How long do you think it took him to get there?
What's that?
Hold on. I got to bounce. Wait, I missed it. Let me try again.
Like, he had to get the angles right. Well, Machine Man just waited.
But with the speed and ruthlessness of a striking cobra, the freelance felon launches himself towards Machine Man. But then he just ends up shooting him with his little rich laser.
He could have done that from afar.
And shoots Machine Man through a wall.
And then Machine Man's face melts again.
Now it's the other side. Oh no, that's the reflection. And, yeah, it's the same side.
It's the same side.
Adding insult to injury.
And he was really... He's going to a darker place in his mind.
But he has to stay strong. He's not going to go insane like his metal brethren.
And that gives time for everyone to escape.
Including the people wrapped up in the...
In gym mat. And then he's like, oh no, I've lost my bearings. And I don't know what's causing my rage-filled blackouts, sir. That's a problem. I'm glad you're already in therapy. You should probably heed your therapist's advice.
Yes. Then we get some Spalding and Gears action.
Gears has a nice looking sandwich.
He does. I'm jealous of that sandwich.
Machine Man is having, like, not sad boy times. He is having, like, mad boy times.
Mad boy vibes.
Yeah, and he's trying not to panic.
He's isolating the problem. It's in his cerebral cortex. His brain is failing.
He's compartmentalizing. Literally. And then, because it's Halloween, he sees some youths going around and trick-or-treating. He pays for a Superman mask to put over his machine face because he's like, I can't go to a costume party with a melty face. What would people think? I need to be Clark Kent. And
pretty much look like anything at a costume party.
Right? That was my thought. I'm like, why are you going to the trouble? Fuck it.
And I couldn't necessarily tell the difference, but Clark Kent has better hair than Machine Man's fake head.
So he haggles. He like barters with this child.
And so he gets in. There's some cultural appropriation happening.
There is. Uh-huh.
And the bishy coworker is just like, ramping up the bitchiness to 10.
Yeah.
Look who finally decided to show up, Mr. Personality himself. Only a dull, unimaginative bore like Stack would wear a business suit to a costume party. And then the gambling Jimmy Olsen asks him if he wants to get in on his pool for the best costume. It's like, sir, you might need to talk to someone.
You've got a problem.
Yeah.
And Pam is excited to see him. But the bitchy one is like, speak for yourself, Cinderella. Now that he's here, this party will become about as exciting as a trip to the orthodontist.
Ugh. Yeah, so then the bitchy coworker is like, hey, your mask, it's really fucking lame. And then snatches it off of his head. Like,
and he freaks out And they freak out and they're like, look at his face. I don't believe it. Beneath one man of steel was another. Oh, what a backhanded comment.
Yeah.
Like, sort of like the
aunt. Well, she's like,
your pitiful attempts at humor amaze me.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, they think my actual face is a mask.
So they think this guy showed up and had two costumes on.
Yes.
Wigs on wigs.
And a very drag queen move. And and yet the bitchy coworker, even more bitchy about it.
Yeah. Which.
And so Jack-O-Lantern then rolls in with people like his thugs are just dressed in white outfits.
I mean, if they and were gray, like, they would be like the putties from the Power Rangers.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I got these invites from the Banana Republic. Too poor to send representatives. Eh.
Rude.
They just let him in because, again, it's a costume party at a super embassy where they're not really checking underneath costumes.
And who's to say the flaming pumpkin is not his real face?
So they gain easy admittance. They go to the control center.
But wait. Pam, it's like, my hunch is, would you like to dance with me, Aaron? And Machine Man is like, not now, Pam. And like, blows her off. And she's like, Aaron snubbed me. His heart must be made of steel. And like, poor Pam.
Oh. So the door is not locked to the control center because Jack-O-Lantern just gasses the people in there.
I mean, yes, it's a party, but also
like they're diplomats there.
If an insurance adjuster is in charge of security, one would think that they would be all about still making sure that everything is locked.
Yeah.
Well, it's an impenetrable embassy unless we let you in.
Yes.
Once you're in, you got free reign over the whole place.
Yeah.
So then Jack-O-Lantern activate some of the security features that we saw previously, which are basically 6-inch blast doors at every doorway. Just slammed down.
Titanium steel. It's very shiny.
And then another of the features is you can shoot gas through all the vents and gas everyone. Everyone, like good, bad, indifferent. Everyone gets gassed at the same time.
Is it weird to you that they would build that into an embassy?
Yes.
Yes. It's like if you're trying to protect people, like, sure, you knock out the bad guys, but then your people are also gassed, and who's going to come wake them up?
But Machine Man can't be gassed.
It's true. He doesn't have need of air. And he's got like a little finger thingy, like what the...
Like a
the
laser cutter.
Dude from Star Wars. Which one is that? R2-D2?
Yes.
Yes.
And like shove in and twist around.
Yep, shove it in and twist it around.
Yes. Pam, buckle up.
I mean, he is battery operated because, but he, Machine Man trapped in this corridor, is still able to find some circuits to talk to the computer and become one with the computer, but also force it to overload, which seems mutually exclusive in my head, but it's okay.
But Jack-O-Lantern, well, Machine Man is busy, pogos down the hallway with his goons in tow to initiate a boss battle.
Yeah. And Machine Man just sort of turns into one of those wind catcher ducks. Just like those wing pedals are flailing, knocking all the bad guys all over the place. And dissipating some gas by doing the exact same thing. Yes, a lot of loosening of his arm couplings.
A true mercenary knows when to find the back door, says Jack-O-Lantern. The back half of this book has turned very sexual. And so Machine Man is trying to keep Jack-O-Lantern away from the ballroom. Not quite successful.
No, he fails. He pogos through a wall. Unclear if he blasts through the wall or throws a little pumpkin bomb because he's basically like a hobgoblin.
Which, spoiler, he becomes the hobgoblin.
Yeah.
Jason, what?
Jason Masondale, I guess is his name.
Yeah, like the second Hobgoblin.
Oh, this is the proto Hobgoblin then?
Because there was Jack-O-Lantern, then there was actual Hobgoblin.
Who was one of the
That was Ned Leeds, wasn't it? Was Ned Leeds the original Hobgoblin?
Oh.
And then it was an Osborn. And then
the other Osborn became the Green Goblin.
Yeah, there's a lot of intermixing there. And then there's a demo goblin as well, who's like a demonic version of, yeah, it's too many goblins.
Yeah, but then someone who took on the mantle of Hobgoblin is like, I'm Hobgoblin no more. I am Jack-O-Lantern.
Oh.
So, yes, it's...
It's like flightless birds who were all flightless, and then they gained the ability. They went to other continents, and then all those relatives then lost the ability again. Like, yeah. They reverted.
Yeah, it's just like that.
Yes, yes.
It's a super cool fun fact about flightless birds.
Okay.
I think it's more like there's a villain costume warehouse, and when you decide you want to be a villain, you just walk in and pick one, and they're like, I'm going to be Hobgoblin.
You're like, I am a pumpkin-themed villain. What do you got for me?
What's the family tree? And like, I want the ancestor.
Starbucks switched to their peppermint stuff, and I'm pissed, so I need a, I need a PSL right now.
So this battle is legit happening in the middle of all these poor bystanders because he's pogoing around. Like, do you think they clear the floor? They're like, oh shit, he's coming down, and they run.
There's like 720 people in this ballroom, and they're pogoing around. And
he traps him in...
A magnetic field.
Yes.
A highly charged magnetic field. And while it doesn't really affect Jack-O-Lantern, it does affect the concussive grenade that he had in his hand. So all the force just like barrels back on Jack-O-Lantern, and he's left smoking on the floor.
Yeah. And everyone is stunned. They're like, wow, he defeated him, but no one says anything. No one thanks him.
Absolutely not. It's very like, you're a robot, so we don't have to observe any common courtesy towards you.
Yep. So then Gears is like, wow, no wonder you've been having blackouts. All your circuits have been blown. There's tangled wires up in your head. I can fix this. And so he gets fixed. He no longer has psychological problems.
But he still needs to let the solder set.
Yes.
So if it's just like his face all over again. It's like, you're still drying. Don't go too far.
And
do too much.
And we end with him saying, I have so much yet to learn, to experience in a world that's so gigantic, so filled with infinite wonders. He's really positive.
He is.
I'll just take my chances as I've always done. I'm in no hurry to commit myself. I intend to be around for a long, long time. Followed immediately by the words, the end. So, like this, boom, series done. And
he's taking a leave of absence from the insurance agency. Like, everything is setting up for, like, grand, wondrous adventures, and instead this is the last issue.
So Jason,
yes,
this issue,
super fun
set us up for Machine Man's next adventures. I'm wearing an Avengers shirt. I don't see Machine Man on it though.
Well, I don't want to say that he disappears completely, but his appearances are a little more spotty from here on. He next appears in Marvel 2-in-1 in October and November of 1982. I don't remember where we ended off here. Is it sometime in 79? So I think we've lost, like, he doesn't show up again for 3 years. And in this...
Which might have been DeFalco writing...
The 2-in-1? Yeah, I didn't check. Maybe. It's Thing and Jocasta, I believe. And Aaron appears there and falls for Jocasta because, you know, robot love robot.
Yep.
And right before she's destroyed, because that happens a lot to Jocasta.
It does. Unfortunately, I really like her. And
she was in Damage Control recently.
Yeah. Like,
they found her head and turned her on.
And Aaron could turn her on in a different way.
Hey. Yeah, he's got that finger.
They actually just touch fingers.
Yeah. His is battery powered, so it vibrates. we don't see him again for 6 years. And we covered this on the Avenging Hour. He shows up in 1988 in Avengers 287 through 290 as part of the heavy metal storyline. Where all the big robot characters like form a supervillain band or something.
They do, like in Kansas.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Later I've lost track at this point. It became really hard to track down his appearances, but I know he's later captured by S.H.I.E.L.D., who are trying to recreate the Deathlok program, and they want to use something in him to do that. He's rescued by the X-Men, and he helps them against Bastion, which leads to him, X-51, being infected with Sentinel programming. Starts losing self-control around mutants, and then he is destroyed in a fight with the X-Men versus the Red Skull.
Oh, I didn't know they fought the Red Skull.
And then there's a series called X-51, which is it's kind of this stuff, but he looks way more robotic in this series. We're introduced to a character named Agent Jack Kubrick. So we've got Jack Kirby and Stanley Kubrick making Jack Kubrick. And we learn that X-51 was using a life model decoy of this Agent Kubrick, which I'm guessing he got when he was captured by S.H.I.E.L.D.
Probably
since issue one of the series, as a substitute body until he finds his original body. They're like, at the site of this, wherever this big fight was that the X-Men had, he goes back and he's searching through, like kicking pieces of metal around, and finds the original X-51 head. And I it's so weird that that issue ends so strangely. You're like, wait, is this guy Machine Man or is this guy Machine Man? And if I'm following the logic, and it gets kind of muddled, he blows himself up when he's infected with the Sentinel programming, but his self-repair protocols kick in, and then he recreates himself, and he no longer has the Sentinel influence. It's a ridiculous 90s solution to a problem. We later had, there's AIM, there's some sort of weird cyborg Transformers street gangs involved. There's something called Zero, X-E-R-O. And then the 2001 monolith appears again and takes X-51 to meet the Celestials.
Oh.
Yeah, it goes way off the rails.
Yeah.
And that takes us up to like July of 2000. He makes a couple more appearances in 2003, including like background in the Avengers JLA crossover. And that Marvel Universe The End series, is that the one where Thanos murdered everybody? Or I don't know if you know that miniseries. I don't remember it. It's like one of those where there's like a mass all characters, and he's just kind of there. And then I don't think we see him again until 2006 when Warren Ellis launches Next Wave,
which you can find all the issues we're talking about today on Marvel Unlimited. What really surprised me is there are only a handful of issues, but spread over like 4 years. So
the Marvel, Next Wave stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was originally, I feel like it was originally supposed to be like a 6-issue miniseries. So they did like the first half of it and then they came back to it.
Got it.
Oh.
So it's Next Wave. Healing America by beating people up. And what is next? What this seems like an Avengers offshoot, Jason?
Like an anti-hero one?
I wish I could explain. So when this first came out, I actually owned a comic book store. And I remember being super excited by this series because it did one of my favorite things. And we talk about this on the Avenging Hour, how I'm a huge fan of the Defenders. Mm-hmm. Because it's all these weird characters brought together. And you're like, how are they going to make this work? And that's exactly what Warren Ellis did with Next Wave. People thought that it was kind of like an alternate universe kind of thing, but then Marvel, I guess, has made it canon at some point. So everything that happens here is part of the Marvel universe, but it does seem like a weird amalgamation of characters and these goofy little parody versions of S.H.I.E.L.D. that Warren Ellis creates and whatever the opposite of S.H.I.E.L.D. would be, like Hydra or AIM or whatever. I can't really explain it. I don't know if you read the entire run of it. They end up fighting a bunch of broccoli men. Like it's they fight Fin Fang Foom.
Yeah, so that's what this issue will set up.
Yeah, so it's number one. So we're establishing everything. And we open on Elsa Bloodstone, who I have feelings about because of Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, the video game.
The video game?
Because
her quips were just the worst.
Yeah, she is a very annoying character.
And she's interviewing Captain Fuck?
No. See, that's the running joke, is that the captain is supposed to be... Warren Ellis is kind of making fun of the fact that Marvel had all these characters that were named Captain Something. So this guy is like a pastiche of all of them together. So he's just the captain. So they always bleep out whatever second name he's saying.
Oh, okay.
So they're at a cafe. They see this thing.
Well, they're... I don't know, it's still giving interview vibes, and the captain gives this story about meeting Captain America, and he said his name, which Captain America did not like, so he beat him up, left him in a dumpster with soap in his mouth, which is entertaining.
So the Beyond Corporation is building something in the distance from this town in the mountains, and Captain Shit, Captain Fuck, Captain Cunt is like, they think it's a mall being built. All these
it's people. Like gigantic.
Yes.
And it's in North Dakota. And like, where do you think there are these gigantic mountains in North Dakota? Have they never been? Like, I have thoughts and feelings.
Well, this is
they're talking about weapons of mass destruction under the mall, and Elsa's like, I'm gonna need more tea. And she's meanwhile, what's that?
I said she's very British.
Yes.
Yes. Up above, they don't have a helicarrier, but they do have hate. Highest anti-terrorism effort.
It's the Aero Marine. They're flying headquarters, which...
Oh, I guess it does look like a submarine.
Yeah. So the director of hate is Dirk Anger. Like Nick Fury, but Dirk Anger.
Oh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's just giving them shit. He's like, I'm 90 years old. I can heal anything. I smoke a bazillion cigarettes and cigars. I chug vodka and whiskey.
And dinner is meat, raw meat that I rip off of an animal, and they bury the rest of it in New Jersey for hate.
I feel like Warren Ellis has created a Hunter S. Thompson version of Nick Fury.
It is so extreme. Like, it's hilarious.
And someone's like, you have a call? And he's like, oh, I'll be right there.
And he goes to, like, the communications room, which is just
a giant telephone.
It's a giant receiver hanging from the ceiling. And that's how he takes his call. And we get Monica Rambeau.
I guess I should say that hate is not affiliated with Elsa and company. The team is in Shockwave Rider, which seems very early 2000s.
Yes.
That name. So.
Monica and Machine Man have found the Beyond Corporation's marketing plan, and they're like, so they just want to like product test their weapons of mass destruction on the American public.
And Dirk is like, it's an open bidding process. Like, it's faith-based funding, just sort of creepy. And so Monica's like, we're out, like, you can't be doing this. And we get Machine Man running the ship.
Yeah,
he looks much different.
He really does. Like,
the sunglasses have been fused into his face.
Just like, I mean, that's happened with Gambit.
Oh, the all new X-Factor look.
Yeah.
Everyone had, and I think Manifold has it too, those sunglasses without any bars.
Yeah, like the Morpheus sunglasses from the Matrix, where they just like clip onto the bridge of your nose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't get it.
So they're going
Oh, but it does make sense with Machine Man because his putty was still lead and he ran into a wall.
It just stuck there.
That's why the lenses are there.
So our team that we see finally on the title page is Elsa Bloodstone, Monica Rambeau, Machine Man, Dirk Anger.
And I didn't realize this was Boom Boom.
It is Boom Boom. That's it. And Captain Shit.
Yeah.
Captain Fuck All. I love this version of Machine Man. He says he needs beer to function. He calls humans fleshy ones. He's caught staring at his teammates' cleavage.
Oh.
I feel like Warren Ellis has done a complete flip here. Like, instead of Machine Man wanting to be or feel like a real human, he now realizes that he's like above humanity and looks down on them a little bit.
He's realizing his AI self and is embracing that side of himself.
So this biological weapon of mass destruction that is in this mountain in North Dakota.
And it's Fin Fang Foom.
It is. Mm-hmm. And the jokes.
This is so bad.
Fin with his Fang underwear. Foom,
mommy was a slut lizard that did the bad thing with suggestively shaped piles of nuclear waste. And 9 months later, Fin Fang Foom has been burning with the need to mate since 1956. Fin Fang Foom has absolutely no genitals whatsoever. Fin Fang Foom. Oh, you cannot imagine how annoyed he is. And then it says, Next Wave is a superhero comic about five people who have just minutes to prevent a town from being eaten by a giant lizard monster in purple underpants.
So there's a lot of swearing.
Yeah.
And
this is where we get some of that Machine Man stuff that Jason talked about, how he runs on beer.
There's beer in there? And she's like, he's like, I wish, just saying. I'm hooked. And he does the thing to realize what's happening. Monica's like, we should have code names. And Machine Man's like, Machine Man, my name's Aaron Stack. Aaron is fine. What's the point? It's not like Photon is terribly awe-inspiring.
Plus, right? She's had like 16 names at this point, I think.
Yeah.
And Tabitha has had about 9, and she's like, and they all sucked. And she's like, but also, I was on the phone, so what's happening?
Yeah. Why? Yeah, she's like a teenager in this.
Is she?
I mean, she seems like it. She seems like a mall teen where she just like can't be bothered, like, ugh, whatever.
I was not expecting this from Boom Boom. Not that I know much about her, but I guess if she gets the chance to blow stuff up, she's happy.
Yeah.
So
the battle is raging on the ground as they are up in the air still.
Yes. And I like how Monica's like, Boom Boom, wear this so you can fly above. And she's like, but what about the English girl? Isn't she on the ground? And Monica's like, yeah, but I don't like her, so it's fine.
Yeah.
So cut two on the ground. Elsa gets run over with a guitar case by these broccoli people who are from the Beyond Corporation's HR department. But Captain goes off. Elsa's left with these people. And she sort of kicks the shit out of them and like smashes a guitar over the head of one of them as if she's, what's his face? I had his name and now it's left.
Jeff Jarrett.
Yes. Or the Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, she checks them out and scans him. Then he's a plant-based robot, but not really a robot because it's like bad software. That's been upgraded from Beyond Corporation XP, which I think is a dig at Microsoft XP.
Yeah, it's just a lot of ass kicking. We see that Monica has had her powers since childhood and incinerated a dog,
which seems like some animal cruelty.
And it seems out of character for Monica. Yeah. But again, like you said, Jason, this was created to be apart from the 616 and now has been woven in.
Oh.
So,
which I imagine means that everyone is pretending like it doesn't exist. You can't have Captain Photon just incinerate a dog for being a yip yip dog.
Well, you can.
I mean, it's they did. Just,
yes. Canonically, it has now happened in continuity. So Machine Man is sort of being dispatch, I feel, to everyone. And he's helping coordinate the efforts. Boom Boom jumps out of their vehicle, flies down, and
is about to attack Fin Fang Foom. And she's like, oh my God, it's wearing underpants.
Yes. And that's the end of the issue. So we get a little tease of sort of where Machine Man went.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally different character.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And
there's no, like, all the campy fun from Machine Man issue 19 is gone.
Yes.
Yes. It's more snarky fun now.
Yes. Your final issue that you chose is Tony Stark Iron Man number 3 from 2018. So again, we're leaping forward a lot of years.
Yeah, there's not a lot in between there. So I wanted to show that this take, the newer take on Machine Man, is a different again.
Yeah, it's new and gritty.
Yes. We get someone looking from their eyes at this package from Stark Unlimited, and it's a little interface thingy. The person puts it on. There's the whole, like, do you agree to these terms and conditions, blah blah blah. You're beta testing this virtual landscape thing. If you can find the actual users, then you get points and there's a cash prize.
It's like that Pokemon game on your phone.
Pokemon Go.
Sort of.
And he's like, if you find me,
it's like Skyrim. There's a lot of NPCs running around doing their thing. And then you just have to figure out which ones are the humans to win a prize and help them work all the bugs out. And they're all Iron Man.
Yeah, that's the twist, is all these people who got these beta testing masks to put on are all Iron Man. So, like,
would you do this and become an Iron Man?
No.
There's a lot of time hopping. We get some scenes from yesterday, and like Tony's team is hanging out in Central Park,
like his friends.
Yeah. So Jocasta's there. Rhode is there.
Rhode.
I don't know.
Ooh, Rhode.
I thought that's what it was in one of the movies.
No, it's Rhode.
Oh,
Rhode. Rodeo Drive is there. We have Amanda Armstrong, who used to be like a punk singer.
Well, am I supposed to know who
she is? I didn't know who she was.
Oh, well, good for her. She's signing an autograph for
someone who, and she's like flirting back, and she's like, you don't have to call me Ms. Armstrong.
We can get coffee and hang out.
So they're all getting the pitch. Like, and Tony's like, I want all of you to help me out too.
And Rhodey is out because he knows what this is really based off of.
Yes.
And he wants no part of it.
And Jocasta is like, can I do it? And Tony's like, of course you can. Why wouldn't you want to? And she's like, well, I'm like a machine and I'm artificial intelligence. So is it really fair?
And Machine Man shows up.
And he is very much like a robot liberation front.
I like his person. Hair, though.
He's like super metallic-y in this one.
Yeah, because he's like, fuck your fake flesh. To speak of alliteration from Machine Man 19, fuck your fake flesh. I am going to be a machine, to quote Lady Gaga. I was born this way, so humans can all just screw off.
But he wouldn't really say human, he would say flesh bag.
Yes. He's really pissed that Jocasta is like, one, talking to a human, and two, wants to like help a human.
Their relationship seems super toxic. And
yep.
He's dating. I feel like at some point in their history they've gotten married, but I might be wrong.
Oh, and they're like screaming at each other.
Yeah, like this has to be so uncomfortable
for everyone else around. And then this Bethany person is watching them storm off, and he's like, you're part of a community, one that wants to turn into, or when he wants to turn into a great big shit Chuck E. Cheese robot birthday party band. Like, he's not a fan of this escape situation.
We cut back to the escape, and all we're seeing are hands. Like, we can see from the perspective of one of the people in here that's going to an arena.
United Class Wrestling Federation. And now I know what this is because of Gray Malkin Lane's episode on the queer icon, D-Man.
And D-Man is here.
He is.
Yay. And
someone has beaten this person that we're in this perspective, but someone else beat them to this location. And they just shot D-Man. They thought that he was a human user.
And he was not. So then we see the hands fly off to it. The Battle of the Bands at an arena, and they zap
both Amanda Armstrong and the lead guitarist,
who is the dude, because she was like, hey, in the virtual world, do you want to be in my band?
And he's like, yeah.
She's like, that'd be so cool. And it's like, why are you saying this in front of everyone? Like, you just gave away your location.
And he, like, as they're coming out of the virtual thing, they're like, oh, I thought we would have made it longer. And she was like, no, you really sucked on the guitar.
You made it so obvious.
And she's like, let's just go and grab a burger.
Yes, like, let's do a real world date, not this Escape thing where I don't have to listen to you play bad guitar.
So we see the hands going to Wild West Town, which is very much Westworld.
And yeah. there's like some jokes about Westworld.
Yes.
And Rawhide Kid is there. And it's funny because there's all these Iron Mans running around, yes, being like, is there a new sheriff in town? Like all these tropes from those Western movies, like trying to figure out.
Yeah. And one of them is, howdy, stranger. You know, you are the third metal-skinned man to ask me that today.
Yeah.
So.
Where can I find the sheriff?
Yes.
Train robbers recently?
But then things go sideways, like shit is going wrong. There's a big warning in the sky, and a warning comes through and it's like, hey, all you users out there and all you AI people, take cover. This is not a drill. And Machine Man bursts in and just like lays waste to everyone. Yeah.
Like, that's right, flesh bags. I'm shutting you down. All of you down. The entire damn system down. Log the fuck off. Cyberspace is for cyber people.
And it's really extreme. And then we get a flashback to the previous night. It's the Uncanny Valley, a secret robot bar where they can all gather. Herbie from the Fantastic Four is there.
Is that the cute one with the big eyes?
Yes. They created him for the Fantastic Four cartoon in the 80s because they were afraid if they included the Human Torch, it would encourage kids to start fires.
Oh, so, and a robot was a solution to that?
Yes, because it was the 80s.
Okay.
So there's no Human Torch. There's just Herbie, which is an acronym.
Fantastic Three, and then this little robot guy.
Oh.
He's right there in that cabinet next to Thing.
Oh.
So the previous night, we have Aaron showing up to this bar, and
he's shiny pissy robot.
Yeah, he's really pissy.
He is. The pissy robot gives him a master interface mask of like, you can get in, the motherboard won't be able to kick you out, you can do whatever you want. And we find out that it's a image inducer of this Bethany person. And she's like, I'm setting Aaron up as the fall guy for torpedoing this whole thing. And she's very malevolent looking. Is she the bad guy of this series?
I didn't read enough of it. Is this supposed to be Bethany Cabe?
I think so.
Sure. Let's go with that. So. She wants to, at the very least, she's the ultimate mastermind villain of this issue.
For this person, yes.
Yeah.
So we go back to the Great Escape where poor Kazar and Zabu are being blasted. Like this really cartoony world, which looks like Scotty Young drew everything and everyone in it. Where everyone's getting eliminated.
And even the AIs are like, don't do this. I'm an AI like you. And he's like, look at y'all dancing for the skin sacks amusement.
I think, is that Damon Hellstrom getting eliminated along with Captain Marvel?
I don't know. There's a cape. It's not quite a trident. It almost looks, but he's got like underpants. And a cape, and Damon Hellstrom has tights, but Captain Marvel's there. This is the cosmic spaceway, so that might be Wiccan.
So we finally see Doctor Strange is taking control, and he's like, I got this. Beta testers,
users.
Yeah, beta testers, fall back. Magic users, follow my lead, so that they can go up against Machine Man and try to take him down. And we find out that Tony Stark is cosplaying as Doctor Strange.
Yes.
He just has to tweak his goatee a little bit. It'll look just like him.
Yeah, and you get that gray streak, and then he's there.
Yeah.
Yep. And Machine Man looks like it's his old face. He recognized that when he is given the interface, that it's his old Machine Man look, the purple face.
Yeah. So he palms Tony Stark's face and is like, oh, your interface is a two-way street. I can figure out what you're trying to do. And whatever it is, it's a juicy secret. And this person is like, hey, I can blast Machine Man. And Tony Stark's like, no, it'll tear me apart because we're interfaced together. This is only going because this beta test is still going.
Mm-hmm.
So this person shoots themselves in the face to do the game over and release everyone. And that concluded the beta test. And
everything fades away to reveal like real life Tony Stark, real life Machine Man, and the last remaining beta tester, Jocasta.
And hey. I don't quite get the dialogue because Jocasta's like, Aaron, Tony, how did I do? As if the two of them were in on this test together. But Machine Man is acting like he's not a part of it. Like, how did you ruined everything. Who are you? And then she reveals that she's Jocasta. And
she's like, when we get home tonight, we need to talk.
She's packing up.
Yeah. So it looks like their relationship is finally over. The sweeping romance that was Machine Man and Jocasta. The lead romance in Marvel Comics is over. And basically everything was tested to Tony's standards. It looks fine. He's releasing it to the world. Bethany is there. So I think I would need to read more of the series to understand the context of her. Yeah. Within the corporation.
Yeah.
Jocasta comes with her rolling suitcase and a box.
Yes.
What does a robot have to pack up?
I don't know.
There's got to still be some knickknacks and tchotchkes.
Yeah. So she works there for Stark, and she's like, I live here, and her new home is just like in Futurama where Bender has a closet.
Get the closet.
Jocasta has a closet, and she's like, I am home, and she puts on her image inducer, and that's where she runs the program of just her being in a nice apartment.
Yeah, and it was a Turing, I don't know what a Turing test is, something to do with AI, but something that she was doing and she passed, but also Tony was doing it for him because he has rebuilt himself and redownloaded himself.
Mm.
So it's that ship of Theseus thing.
Yes.
Where, like, if everything's replaced, am I still me? Do I still have a soul?
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't know, but I do.
And it was an interesting place that you brought us, Jason, to leave us with Machine Man. So
yeah,
I'm guessing this is one of like his most recent appearances and we haven't seen him since.
Yes, I took your whole rule of three thing literally and gave you basically three different Machine Mans.
Yeah.
Men.
And at the end of that Tony Stark Iron Man, we find out that the romantic storyline will be Janet Van Dyne with Tony Stark.
Oh,
yeah.
That's what I was referencing at the very top of the episode.
He's been trying to get with her since the 60s.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
So any last thoughts on Machine Man, Jason?
And overall, why did you choose him?
Well, I think I pretty much showed you why I chose him. He's he's a really weird character. Every time he shows up, he's like a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you ever really know what to expect of him. There's a whole other version of it. There's a Machine Man 2020 version that's like completely different than this, that takes place in that Iron Man 2020 pseudo future universe thing.
Oh.
Yeah, he's been around for, you know, 50 years, and he's a really diverse character.
Yeah, like a lot going on.
I've seen some character development changes.
Yeah.
Drastic changes.
Yeah, in ways that I wouldn't have anticipated.
Yeah.
It's not often that you see Marvel take a character that started off as pretty
happy,
campy, and happy-go-lucky, like how Machine Man 19 ended. Like, he was really optimistic and ready to go out there and be a good force in the world and sort of explore. And you're like, okay, I can see, like, we've seen character arcs like that before, where someone's going out and they want to discover themselves and do some good in the world. But like by 2018, wow, he is just an asshole.
I feel like there's a, maybe a student development theory about this, where like you're passing and you think that that's the right thing to do. And then you're like, no, I'm going to like fully embrace who I am and what I am. And then like, it hasn't settled back down again. It was just, he was in that full swing. Like, I'm an AI, I'm a robot, I'm gonna own it, and like
to the expense of everything else.
Yeah, like, separate myself from everything else that I was a part of before.
Yeah, he almost has like a little bit of an Ultron vibe here.
Yeah,
where he's like, so like, he wanted to be a human, and now he's so much, he's almost completely against humans, like a complete switch.
Yeah.
He's like number one in season four of Battlestar Galactica versus the sixes and the eights and the fours.
No, I haven't reached that far.
Oh.
I'll get there someday.
Yes.
All right, Jason. This is coming out in mid-May. You are still going to be in volume three, I believe, of Avengers then?
Yes.
So you're currently covering Kurt Busiek and George Perez.
Yes.
And their pretty legendary run on the Avengers, after a very disastrous volume two.
Yes. Yes, their course correcting run. Yeah.
Oh,
volume two was the late Liefeld one.
Liefeld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With, I saw some of the images that were posted on Instagram. I'm like, those bodies.
And I've listened to all the episodes. Philip doesn't have as big a commute as me, so doesn't listen to the breadth of things, but volume two of Avengers, I haven't read it, but I listened along to all the episodes that yourself and John put out, and I don't think I ever want to read volume two of Avengers.
Because it was Liefeld, a dark time.
Liefeld started it, or Liefeld, however you want to pronounce it, he started it, but then they pulled him off of the book. And then it was up to like poor Walt Simonson to like figure shit out and close it out.
Oh.
Where it's like, this is a mess. And I'm sure Walt Simonson would have made none of the choices that were made to start volume two of the Avengers.
Yeah, we've made the joke that they always bring Walt Simonson in when they need someone to like patch a hole or like fix up the Avengers for the next guy.
Oh.
But volume three, like you said, Jason, that's course correcting and really establishing who the Avengers are for a long time, like the vibe of them, what the team means, and how things go. And there's a gap in my Avengers knowledge between like where you are now in your podcast and eventually, you know, Hickman doing things.
Oh, yeah. You missed the whole Bendis run in there.
Yes.
And Chuck Austin and Jeff Johns and... But I do want to say, a Machine Man in the issues, the early issues of Volume 3, Machine Man does make an appearance.
Oh.
That's exciting.
Nice.
Yes.
He's so just the old Machine Man. He doesn't have any kind of personality. He's kind of a background character. But
no. But still, an appearance is an appearance when you're a character like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll take anything you can get.
Yeah. So where can people find you online?
I think we're just on Instagram, aren't we? The Avenging Hour. And at then,
the
you
Avenging
know,
Hour. Send all of your thoughts into Jason at the Gmail address. Where can people write you?
Yeah, that is avenginghour@gmail.com.
So nice. Send all of the Machine Man thoughts So maybe there will be a repeat. Maybe we'll do a second Machine Man episode. Oh.
Come on, I just condensed like 40 years worth of character into. I don't think we're going to have enough appearances by then.
Probably not. Maybe we'll do Jocasta.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Jason, for popping on, spending an hour and a half with us. Oof. Talking about Machine Man. It's been wonderful. I loved the issues. It was so much fun. And everyone, be sure to follow Avenging Hour. Listen in. It's so much fun. As you can get caught up on anything, go back. You're celebrating like a decade as a podcast or something.
Something like that, yeah. I mean, to be fair, we took like 2-3 years off in between because we had too much.
Yes, that's fair.
But yeah, I think we do a pretty good job. John and I are like a good team. We're like the like NFL broadcasters or something, where you have the play-by-play guy and then the color commentary, or like one guy who tells facts and the other guy who tells jokes.
That's the same as like wrestling commentators. Yeah. Like there's always the play-by-play and always the color commentary.
Right. Yeah. There's the guy that's like reading the dictionary to you, and then there's the other guy that's doing the 1-star review on Amazon and being all snarky about it. Like, who put so many words in this book?
Perspective. Yeah. So everyone, go over, check out Avenging Hour, and we will catch you next time. See you later.